Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you live today from Nashville, Tennessee. We're very thankful for the folks here at For Faith and Family and Richard Land Live, our friends and colleagues on the Salem Radio Network, for their hospitality here. We're going to be talking today about a new book that is getting a great deal of attention in the media. The title is Perfect Madness, Motherhood in the Age of Anxiety. The author is Judith Warner, who is not only the author of this particular book, but also a stringer for Newsweek magazine. She got a lot of coverage on the cover story of last week's edition of Newsweek, and she is arguing that motherhood has now become an anxious trial for many women as they are trying to juggle the myth, she says, of motherly perfection along with professionalism and all the rest. We're going to take a distinctively Christian perspective on this particular argument. And my guest today in the second segment is going to be Dr. Dorothy Patterson, who is both an author and an expert and a mother. And we'll look forward to having her as our guest in just a few moments. First of all, presidents by now should be accustomed to taped conversations getting them in trouble. Front page news story in Sunday's New York Times is that a series of taped conversations held between a man by the name of Doug Weed and then Texas Governor George W. Bush have been released to the press. You can imagine if there was any dirt to be found in this, it would have been all over the nation's newspapers, a big story over the weekend. But instead, what is revealed from these conversations is that the George W. Bush that Doug Weed engaged in conversations and surreptitiously taped is the George W. Bush we know as president. Some interesting facts, however, that have come out in the background of this. For instance, the president was very clear that his concern about same-sex marriage predated his election to the presidency in the year 2000. We have some very clear statements about what he meant by compassionate conservatism and how he really thought that as a president he would address those critical issues. On the political side, it's interesting to see how he handicapped the race for the Republican presidential nomination. It looks like he did not consider John McCain to be that great of a threat, but instead looked to Steve Forbes as perhaps a greater threat, but it turned out to be very much otherwise. I think one of the most interesting aspects of this is that the tapes revealed his interest in John Ashcroft, who was, until just recently, Attorney General of the United States and was this administration's Attorney General throughout the first 4 years of President George W. Bush's presidency. And it's very interesting. You see the attitude of George W. Bush in here, and in an unguarded moment when he was talking to Mr. Weed, who, by the way, will pay a significant price with this White House for releasing these tapes. It is more than an indiscretion. It's more than an act of bad etiquette. It is indeed an act of betrayal. However, in this case, no material was given to betray the president to his political enemies. But it's interesting. At one point, the president said this, or the man who would become president said, "I like Ashcroft a lot. He's a competent man. He would be a good Supreme Court pick. He would be a good attorney general. He would be a good vice president." When Mr. Weed predicted an uproar if Mr. Ashcroft were appointed to the Supreme Court because of his conservative religious views, Mr. Bush said, "Well, tough." This is a convictional presidency. And when you have a president, or in this case a man running for president, is willing to say, "Well, tough," to opposition to something as significant as a judicial appointment, you know you have someone who is going to go out on a limb, and this president continues to do so. Karl Rove was speaking just over the weekend to the Conservative Political Action Committee's annual convention, and Mr. Rove, who has been for years the political strategist working alongside President George W. Bush, is now also White House Deputy Chief of Staff. And speaking to this group of conservatives meeting in the Ronald Reagan building in Washington, he said, "You must not let up, must not grow or grow timid, tire or grow timid." He said this, "The next time one of your smarty pants liberal friends tells you, well, he, that is Bush, doesn't have a mandate, you tell him this delicious fact. This president got a higher percentage of the vote than any Democratic candidate for president since 1964. You put all this together, and by the way, Vice President Dick Cheney also spoke to the CPAC meeting over the weekend, and they both basically said the same thing. The second administration under George W. Bush is going to be as aggressive in terms of policies, in terms of confrontation, as the first, in terms of dealing with domestic issues. A high-risk presidency is the way some presidential historians are already referring to this. Political strategist Michael Barone's looking at it and saying this is a president who's putting himself on the line, and it is likely to have some enduring historical effect. We'll be watching this along with you. Well, perhaps some of you were watching The Simpsons last night. No editorial comment there other than the fact that The Simpsons has now placed itself as a program right in the midst of the culture war. I didn't see it, but last night, one of the characters in The Simpsons came out of the closet and announced that she was going to be marrying another woman. In this case, it is the sister of Mrs. Marge Simpson. It is Patty Bouvier. And if you know that program, you know this is one of the gravel-throated, cynical, mean, and, rather antipathetic women, the sisters of Marge. And now one of them, Patty, has come out of the closet, and she is going to get married. And what you have here is another sign of where Hollywood is over against the convictions of the American people. You don't have to look very far in order to find out where Americans are on this. Just look at the overwhelming survey and polling data. Look at the overwhelming result of the November 2nd election. Whenever this comes up for a vote, an amendment, for instance, at the state constitutional level, the momentum to prevent same-sex marriage from being enacted is simply enormous. Just ask the people of Missouri, the people of Louisiana, Oklahoma, you name it. But Hollywood sees it very differently. That's why we do call it the Left Coast. Marty Kaplan, Associate Dean of the University of Southern California's Annenberg School of Communications, who is also host of a media talk show, said this. It's saying to those who demonize homosexuality or what they call the homosexual agenda, anything from lighten up to get out of town. That's what the analyst says, and I think he's just about got it right. That's what The Simpsons, as a program, and of course, let's just remind ourselves in a moment of temporary sanity as a culture, that The Simpsons are not real people. They do not speak. They are cartoon characters with animated voices. But behind that cartoon is a human being, actually a group of human beings, whose agenda is now very clear. Speaking of agendas, for 25 years, the nation of China has had a one-child policy, and it has been a disaster. Now, those who are only concerned about population growth consider this policy a success. But we've been tracing on this program over recent months what it has led to in terms of a demographic imbalance between males and females. In some regions of China, it is so exaggerated that now there is no hope for many young Chinese men ever to marry, ever to find a wife. There is a long-standing and ancient prejudice toward boys, and if a culture requires a couple to have only one child and then orders abortion for any subsequent pregnancies, those couples are likely, in a culture that is and has been for many, many centuries committed to the value of boys over the value of girls, those couples are going to be tempted to use modern sex selection technologies in order to determine, whether it be by ultrasound or even some more sophisticated method, the gender of the baby. And if it is not a boy, they are often aborting. Now, this has even caught the attention of the New York Times. On February 17, it ran a news story from a city in China that is very revealing. For instance, consider seeing these signs along the streets. Quote, firmly crack down on the criminal activity of drowning and other ways of brutally killing female babies. This particular doctor who runs an abortuary in this little Chinese town said, quote, I don't know what happens elsewhere, but we don't do gender tests here. Our equipment can't detect the sex before 6 months. The machine is too small. Don't believe him. What the New York Times is really showing here is that the sex selection process has now gone underground. China as a nation is now cracking down, but they have set up an impossible situation in a moral calculus that is nothing less than institutionally evil. They say on the one hand, you must have a one-child policy, and the alternative after one successful pregnancy is abortion. On the other hand, they now recognize the demographic imbalance their policy has now affected, and so they say you can't find out the gender of the child and then decide whether to abort it. You can't also, they're now arguing, imagine this, you can't just kill an infant baby girl, infanticide, which has become routinized all throughout China, and it's not working. Now, why would the New York Times be all up in arms about this? Well, I could wish they would be so up in arms about all abortions. But isn't it interesting that when it's the abortion of a girl under this circumstance, all of a sudden there is a new concern, and that is the feminist concern. If only this was a concern that was extended to all babies, born and unborn, in terms of the sanctity of human life. This is a very sad story, because what you really find out when you read this New York Times account is that couples are simply finding underground means of doing the gender selection, the gender identification, and they're still going along with the abortion and also infanticide. There is no way that a government can institutionalize abortion without creating moral horrors beyond the imagination of the human mind. And the people of China have now done it, and they're now seeing it. And by the way, when you create a demographic imbalance like this, there's no going back. You can't create 20 or 22 or 25-year-old girls. You're facing in China a generation that is reaping the bitter moral fruit of seeds that were sown in a campaign against human life a quarter of a century ago. If you're watching for the Academy Awards, just remember that what you see is not always what you get. The movie Million Dollar Baby is supposed to be about fighting, but it ends up being about assisted suicide. We're going to be talking about that tomorrow. But today we're going to be talking about the book Perfect Madness by Judith Warner, Motherhood in the Age of Anxiety. Frankly, reading this book will make you anxious enough, as will the cover story in last week's Newsweek magazine. We're going to look at it from a Christian perspective in terms of an ideal of motherhood that, frankly, neither Ms. Warner or Newsweek, I think, will ever understand. We'll set them straight, and we'll be right back. From Nashville, Tennessee, this is the Albert Mohler Program. Mueller Program. The cover of Newsweek magazine last week was interesting enough, certainly grabbed your attention. On the cover, a young mother holding a baby in her lap. She's sitting in a lotus position, and behind her are many arms, more arms than a human being can have, because the insinuation here is that that's what a mom needs. And I think that's probably true enough, but in each hand is something that is symbolic of a different dimension of the young woman's life in America today, and the point is clear. And if you didn't get it from the cover, you'll get it from the text of the article. The article is by Judith Warner, author of a new book entitled Perfect Madness, Motherhood in the Age of Anxiety. And I want to give you just a quick review of the argument here. She is suggesting that the mothers of her generation, basically the 20-something moms of today, find themselves in a very difficult position because they are rejecting two ways of getting it wrong. Number one, they are rejecting what they see as the traditional, conservative, what she calls religious right understanding of the family, which means that a mother's primary responsibility is the nurturing of children and her primary arena is the home. But she's also arguing in an interesting way that the traditional feminists of the 1960s also got it wrong. Because in their ardent defense of a woman's right for a full professional experience, they didn't take into account the fact that a lot of women want more than that. Indeed, they want the experience of being a wife and a mother. And thus, Judith Warner now says this generation faces a disappointing reality of unfulfilled expectations. Listen to this. Most of us, she said, in this generation grew up believing that we had fantastic, unlimited freedom of choice. Yet as mothers, many women face choices, she puts that in quotation marks, on the order of, you can continue to pursue your professional dreams at the cost of abandoning your children to long hours of inadequate health care, or you can stay at home with your baby and live in a state of virtual crazy-making isolation because you can't afford a nanny, because there's no such thing as part-time daycare, and because your husband doesn't come home until 8:30 at night. She clearly intends to start a national discussion. She makes some very clear policy recommendations here. And by the way, what she really wants to do is to turn America into Europe, because she sees in her experience of having lived in France the way a government could be ordered very differently and a culture could set its priorities very differently. She says we need incentives like tax subsidies to encourage corporations to adopt family-friendly policies. We need government-mandated health care standards and quality controls that can remove the fear and dread many working mothers feel when they leave their children with others. We need flexible, affordable, locally available, high-quality part-time daycare so that stay-at-home moms can get a life of their own. We need new initiatives to make it possible for mothers to work part-time by creating vouchers or bigger tax credits to make child care more affordable. She says, in general, we need to alleviate the economic pressures that currently make so many family lives so high-pressured through progressive tax policies that would transfer our nation's wealth back to the middle class. Okay, there's the agenda. This is really a welfare state approach, philosophy, or a proposal that is disguised as a way of alleviating the stresses of modern motherhood. I'm absolutely confident that many of you out there read this news article. We want to know what you think of it. We want you to join the discussion. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Moms out there, do you find yourself living in perfect madness in an age of anxiety? We need an expert. And quite frankly, the one thing I can't do is speak of the firsthand experience of being a mom. But we need someone who has just a bit of reflection on this, and we have a lot more than that in our guest today. Dr. Dorothy Patterson is professor of women's studies at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. She's the author of the book Where's Mom, published by Crossway Publishers. She's a member of the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, and she has a lot of experience here. Dr. Patterson, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Mohler. I'm delighted to be here.
You've read this Newsweek cover story. How did you just read this, first of all, as a mom?
Well, my conclusion was quite different because, first of all, I would reject not just two but all ways going at wrong. I want to get it right. I also would reject the idea of unfulfilled expectations because I want to fulfill my responsibilities. And so we're coming at this issue from two very different ways. But I would say that, yes, I've had maddening moments, if that's the question on the table. And, yes, I have felt inadequate. I felt I had more expected of me than I could ever deliver. But who among us who has a passionate life of wanting to contribute to the world and to your family, first of all, is not going to have that experience from time to time? I used to think that you could have it all, but just not all at once. But I've revised that now that I'm entering my sixth decade, and I don't think you can have it all. I think you want only the best.
And I need to point also that Dr. Patterson is not only the wife of Dr. Paige Patterson, the president of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, but the mother of two grown children and the grandmother of two beautiful little girls. Let's talk about the reality of motherhood today. Dr. Patterson, I think a lot of Christian moms, a lot of moms who wouldn't associate necessarily with the policy proposals that this author is making, do identify with some of the frustrations. If we could pinpoint where those frustrations are coming from, what would you think is the source?
I think the source of it is our lack of faith in the Lord, ultimately. Now, I'm saying that's the ultimate one. I think there are many things that manifest themselves from that. But, for example, if we come to the table and say, we just cannot make our budget stretch, there is no option but for me as a mother to also be a breadwinner. I think most of the time when those decisions are made, they're done based on a piece of paper with bills due and not coming from a budget of what are our necessities and how can we fulfill those. So you have a very false balance sheet. I've looked at this with students often through the years, and unfortunately, we want to have everything that our parents have right now. So a young adult who begins a family, and we don't want to begin a family until we have a home of our own and a good nest egg, until we're through with all our education, we've paid off all our debts, until we have a good settling influence and we've had some fun ourselves and we've had ourselves as a couple to make our special vacations and do all of these things, then we'll be ready to have children.
And once we found ourselves, that's the other part of this whole agenda, and especially in a generation that has been taught that that is the great purpose in life. And Dr. Patterson, when I read this news article, the cover story, then I looked at the book and at other articles this particular writer has written. It strikes me that she really is indicative of an entire generation of men and women, I want to say, but she's writing as a woman in a very intentionally a female way here and indeed trying to revise the feminist agenda. I think this generation thinks you can have it all. And that section I quoted from the article, she basically says that. I think that is one of the root problems. I just don't think we can have it all.
No, we can't. And we can't. I don't think we want the government coming in. I'm not sure she's considered what that means. The government's always standing at the door. And, yes, we could probably bring them in, give us more subsidized child care, give us more policies that are not family-friendly, but that enable a woman to pursue everything she wants to pursue. What we have to come back to realize is that with everything you get from the government comes a lot of baggage that we do not want in the rearing of our children.
And what in the end is more important than raising our children anyway?
What national product? I would love for anyone to tell me a national product produced in this country of at any cost and in any field that would equate the next generation. And we as wives and mothers have the privilege of rearing up the next generation. We have the very best product, and we should give ourselves fully to developing that.
Well, Judith Warner has written a provocative book and now a provocative cover story for Newsweek magazine. It's interesting that even Anna Quindlen, who is one of the liberal commentators for Newsweek and is a feminist of an earlier generation, has some problems with Judith Warner's approach. She says that wanting everything just isn't going to work. She also chastises her for calling for all this government spending without taking into effect the cost and the political context. But, you know, political considerations and economic factors aside, I think the biggest problem with this is that it represents an understanding of motherhood that just isn't consistent with the Christian worldview, which understands that God intends for mothers to be the nurturers of the next generation. And there's nothing, nothing on earth in terms of a human vocation that is greater than that. We'll be back with your calls in just a moment. I'm Albert Moeller.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the program. We're broadcasting today live from Nashville, Tennessee. We're looking at last week's cover story from Newsweek magazine. It is still a very current issue that demands our attention. The article is written by Judith Warner. She's also the author of a book, Perfect Madness, Motherhood in the Age of Anxiety. She's previously written a biography of Hillary Rodham Clinton and is a co-author of a book with current Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean. That ought to tell us something of where her political orientation lies. But looking even beneath the politics, let me tell you something that really concerns me. In this article, she presents motherhood as a trap. Now, Betty Friedan, back in her book, The Feminine Mystique, described the family and marriage and motherhood as a domestic prison. And it looks like Judith Warner is pretty close to that, frankly, because she writes of women who are just driven to distraction by the monotony and the small-mindedness and the tediousness of dealing with children. Listen to the statistics she gives. She suggests that 30% of mothers of young children reportedly suffer from depression. She cites a study saying that 909 women in Texas recently told researchers that they find taking care of kids about as much fun as cleaning their house. She writes about mothers who are simply trapped in this domestic prison of motherhood where the expectations are high. They have to raise their children perfectly, she suggests. Otherwise, they're going to reach censure from other women as well as from society at large. But her argument is, look, you have intelligent women here who are just trapped inside this prison. My guest today, Dr. Dorothy Patterson. Dr. Patterson, when you think of her leading allegation here, that you have intelligent women trapped in motherhood, what does that tell you about her understanding of motherhood?
Well, it says, for one thing, that motherhood has never been a priority to her, nor does she see it as an important profession. I always have thought in my mind that motherhood is essentially a career in the sense that it demands the best of your energies and creativity. And if you have not had any formal training in the various things that are necessary to be a good mother, then you very well better go on your own training program. We have a large library, and a very large section of that library has to do with home maintenance, for example. I probably have 300 to 500 books that are having to do with maintaining the home, with hospitality, with parenting, with marriage. In fact, it may be considerably more than that when you take the whole gamut, because it is one of the widest fields out there. You need more preparation to be a mother than you do probably for any other single profession if you look across the board at all the responsibilities that are yours.
Well, having had a committed mother and being married to one, I can certainly say I've had firsthand reason to observe that. You know, a part of all of this, I think, also has to do with the undeniable fact that motherhood requires an incredible investment of time. And that seems to be what Judith Warner really resents more than anything else. John Podhoretz, writing in the New York Post, really nailed this by suggesting that what Ms. Warner appears to want is motherhood that isn't an imposition on a woman's lifestyle. And I don't think that's ever going to be the case. Folks, I want you to join the conversation, and I want to tell you how. I'd love to hear from some moms out there in particular. I want to hear how you would respond to Judith Warner. What would you tell this Newsweek writer, the author of the book Perfect Madness? How would you offer an alternative vision of what motherhood's all about and how motherhood should be conceived? Give me a call at 877-893-8255. Join the discussion, 877-893-8255. Let's hear from some moms who want to set the record straight. And you can do so. There are a lot of people waiting to hear what you have to say. Dr. Patterson, when you look at this book, let me also mention that in the New York Times on Valentine's Day, this same author, Judith Warner, wrote this. She suggested that according to the National Marriage Project at Rutgers University, children are, quote, a growing impediment to a happy marriage.
Now we're getting to the root of her philosophical foundations. When you look at a child as an impediment or an enhancement, something that you can just use to make you look better, you know, I'm not only a professional woman, but I am a mother. Here is my perfect child. Then you have moved from what you do for a child to what you do for yourself. If you're looking at a product to develop and you're looking only at yourself, whatever the product is, you're never going to do as good a job in developing that product. The important thing is for you to be able to focus on where you want to put your time and energy and creativity, and where is your responsibility? It's developing the product.
Yeah, just reading this particular op-ed piece that Judith Warner wrote for the New York Times, I came across an incredible worldview clash. Just listen to this question that she asked. She says, it raises an important question, that the statement I just read about children as an impediment. Is our national romance with our children sucking the emotional life out of our marriages? You see, here's this whole emotive self-esteem focus of a therapeutic generation. It's all about me, and it's about my marriage, and if the children get in the way, we're going to have government come up with a daycare program to get them out of the way. We'll be back with your calls. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Well, we have lots of callers who want to talk about this whole issue of motherhood and this new book by Judith Warner, Perfect Madness, last week's cover story in Newsweek magazine. Remember, my guest today is Dr. Dorothy Patterson from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. In Louisville, Kentucky, Fort Worth, Texas. There are a lot of Texans who would call me on that one right away. Let's go first today. Calling from Louisville, listening on WFIA. Go right ahead, Day.
Hi. Thank you for having me on your show, Dr. Mueller. But I would like to comment on the article. I have not read it, but from listening to what you've said, when I became pregnant, I had a very, very successful job. I was the major breadwinner and had even been promoted while on maternity leave. But while I was on maternity leave, God laid it on my heart that I should be a stay-at-home mom. And so I gave up my job, and I can't say that I have ever had anything more rewarding. I now homeschool my son. It's been 6 years, and although there are times when I miss the money and there are times when I miss the accolades, there is nothing that can be more fulfilling and more rewarding than being a stay-at-home mom. And I guess I have to say that I do have it all, because by being a stay-at-home mom, I have it all by being able to raise my son.
Day, thank you for your call. That is a very sweet testimony. And quite frankly, you remind me here in the comment that you made that there are so many satisfactions that can come. And one of them, I have to say, as a dad, as a husband, I have to recognize that one of the things my wife gives up in being a mother is some of the contact I get to have out in the world all the time. And that the Lord rewards her in other ways as well. Dr. Patterson, what do you think of Day's call?
Well, interestingly, I don't think Judith Warner has ever tried it Day's way. I don't think she's ever immersed herself in the life of her child or her children or her home. And those of us who have done that and have also had a foot in the professional world, there is no comparison. You don't give up. You simply add blessings that are reserved only for those of us who have had the opportunity to bear a child or to rear a child.
That's a great way to set the record straight. Let's go to Karen calling from Durham, Connecticut, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Karen, go right ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad you could take my call. I haven't read the article yet either, because I'm busy with three boys, and I just got a part-time job. I feel like I also put my career on hold 12 years ago, and, it's been tough. Obviously, there's sacrifices, and it's never, it's very rewarding, but it's not easy. The only thing I can say is that basically my husband has been so supportive, and I feel so lucky because he is working and he has a good job that I can not work. And now I'm going back to work simply because I want to, and I really, I feel like I'm still part-time because I want to be home when they're home from school and help them, do what I have to do with them after school.
Karen, let me ask you, have you ever felt trapped as a mom? I mean, that's what Judith Warner is talking about, this feeling that she says many women in her generation really, really feel of being trapped with children. Have you ever seen your children as a trap?
Well, I will say that there were days when they were little and I was in sweatpants and, my big excursion was going to the grocery store. But that's what I wanted. I mean, I wanted to be a mother, and that was the sacrifice I made and literally put my career on hold. And I hung in there, and I'm very, very happy. I mean, every day. I mean, I'm 39 years old. I am so happy where I am right now.
Thank you for your call, Karen. We really appreciate it. Dr. Patterson, when you hear a woman like Karen and you hear her commitment as a mother. And you could even hear, I think, some of the noise of having three boys behind her.
It's a sweet, sweet sound.
It's the right kind of picture, isn't it?
It's the right picture. And I just encourage Karen to be sure and be very observant as you start back to work part-time. Because being a wife and a mother and maintaining a home is in itself a career of the highest caliber. It doesn't have the accolades publicly in this life. Those will come in the life to come. But it does have some of the greatest opportunities. And once you start even a part-time position, you do restrain yourself from some of the things in your heart to do. So keep an open mind and heart. That may be what God has for you. Only you and your husband can make that decision. But I'm so proud of you for having made the sacrifice to give your first energies, not your leftovers, but your first energies to the people you love most.
Yeah, it was a wonderful testimony. Let's hear from Martha calling on a cell phone. Martha, let's hope you have a good cell. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a little different position. I'm 45, and I had my first child at 39 and my second at 43. So I was part of that indoctrinated 70s feminist screed that told us that being a mother was not fulfilling enough. It wasn't self-actualizing enough. And I watched people beat themselves into the ground to keep a career going. And some of them, my friends, are 46, 47 years old now and have not had children, are sorely unhappy about it. And some of us feel like we were really sold, down the river. And I interact now with younger mothers who were daycare kids and latchkey kids, and they don't want that for their kids. And I'm really pleased about it because I've been a teacher, I've been a business and technical writer, I've had all the career I want, and I get now to do the best thing that I've ever done in my life is be completely immersed in my children's lives. And, you know, there was a real there was a real pejorative view of that. You immerse your children in if you immerse yourself in your children's life, you lose yourself, which I find to be so antithetical to my own experience now.
You know, Martha, I can tell you, you don't sound like you're lost here. That was a powerful call. All I can say after that is that I wish more and more could hear that kind of word, because not only of what you have to say, but quite frankly, Martha, the energy and commitment behind what you have to say.
All public servants lose themselves, in a sense. My husband has a very public position. Our house is a public house. I have to lose myself often in order to meet the needs of our guest and to do our responsibilities. So the greatest service in life is being able to deny yourself and to give to others.
You know, we're going to go to one final caller here. We have just a couple seconds left. Katrina calling from Jackson, Kentucky. Go right ahead.
Hi, I am a full-time physical therapist, but I'm also a mother of two boys, and, I feel that God has led me into the job and the career that I have because it allows me to testify to people and to help them through their healing process, as well as still have time for my two children, and, you know, I make sure that, as a mother, I still talk to them about God, pray with them every night, and read to them, you know, from Bible stories. And I think that it's more of a balancing act between your career and your family, but keeping your family very important in your life.
Katrina, appreciate your call. We're going right into a break here. My guest today is Dr. Dorothy Patterson from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, an expert on motherhood, the author of Where's Mom by Crossway Books. We'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. From Nashville, Tennessee, this is the Albert Mohler Program. To the Albert Mohler Program. We have been discussing Judith Warner's book, Perfect Madness, the cover story in last week's Newsweek magazine on motherhood and the whole question of how we understand motherhood against a critique like that offered by Judith Warner, who suggests that modern young wives and mothers in particular are torn between expectations in the professional workplace and in the home. And she offers what basically boils down to a liberal political agenda for how to get women help by institutionalizing children in daycare and offering other kinds of social welfare programs. Just before we went into the break, Katrina was calling, suggesting that the motherhood is a balancing act, mentioning her own professional career and family. I could tell Dr. Dorothy Patterson wanted to respond. Dr. Patterson?
I would like to respond because I've been there, done that, in the sense that I do have professional training. I have the baccalaureate degree, graduate degree, two postgraduate degrees. So I know what it's like to feel you have a lot of training. I have people asking me, what do you expect to do with this training, even in my own family when I finished. But here's the thing I hope our friend Katrina will keep in mind. It is a full-time job to keep a home and rear children. When you start taking your physical therapy or whatever your job is and doing that after you've given your freshest energies to the family, then I can feel maybe we're on the right track. But when you give your first energies, which is usually the way it works, to your employment, then you give what is left to your children and to your husband and to your family, and you work hard to do that, it's still the balance that is not the best, in my opinion. I really love to see a mom who's going to be a mom first and foremost, not just in her heart, but in her priorities and what she does with her time.
That's wonderfully stated. And I think on the other side of that, I need to affirm the responsibility of husbands and fathers to support wives in their role as given by God, as articulated in Scripture, as set down in God's plan. And sometimes I think there are a lot of wives who have undue pressure on them placed by husbands who expect them not only to fulfill their God-given responsibility in the home, but sometimes for material reasons and all the rest, there are husbands who really sin against God. And also against their wives by trying to force them into the workplace and other situations as well. Dr. Patterson, it's been wonderful to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
Let me again refer you to her book, Where's Mom?, published by Crossway Publishers. And Dr. Patterson is also with me on the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. If you go to that site at cbmw.org, cbmw.org, you'll find some helpful materials. You can find information on this article at the website for Newsweek magazine. You can then come up with your own analysis of the particular article. But more important than that, we as Christians are responsible to come up with our own understanding on the basis of the Word of God as to the proper ordering of the house. Fathers and mothers, husbands and wives, parents and children. That's enough to keep us busy in this lifetime. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about end-of-life issues, issues that will be faced by every family. Today from Nashville, Tennessee, this is Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.